53106.
Moncrief with Gas Networks Ireland. Aren't you tired of that ugly fuel storage tank, having to order and write that big check for the delivery guy? gasnetworks.ie/move to gas.
Is our text number that will cost you 30 cents. Jonathan De Burke Butler joins us once again to look at stories from some other parts of the planet. Jonathan, good afternoon.
Sean, how are you getting on?
Tunisia, we're going to first, and I suppose what is a relatively liberal move by the government.
Well,
there.
That's I couldn't have put it better myself. It's exactly that. In relative terms, it's a big move. They have decided to bring in a law to allow women marry non-Muslims. Now, while that might not seem like a big deal to us, it's a massive deal in that part of the world because they're the first country to do it. I was checking it out just to make sure that was right, and not even Morocco have that, which is kind of saying something, to be honest with you, when we consider what they're like. But since the Arab Spring, Tunisia has really tried to improve itself in terms of women's rights and the like. So when they had the election just after the Arab Spring in 2011, they brought in a quota system. For candidates, at least a 50-50 split.
Okay.
Now, the interesting thing about that was that before that election, 28% of the parliament was represented by women, and then when they brought this in, 27% were represented. So it doesn't always work in people's favour, but at least the option was there. So anyway, this is a big move by them. It was backed by the president, and it's been brought into law. So it overturns a law that's been there since 1973, and they're gradually chipping away at these laws that hinder women, basically, in that society.
Can Muslim men marry non-Muslims?
Sure. Do I have to answer that?
No, you don't. Are there other pressing problems for women there? Is, for instance, domestic abuse a problem?
Yeah, so Amnesty are saying, look, they're making great inroads, but of course the cultural change is the big thing. So you can change the law, but you can't necessarily change the culture overnight.
Yeah.
So they're saying like 70% of women apparently are victims of domestic abuse there. And there's also issues around inheritance rights, but the president has said that that's the next thing that they're going to be tackling. So long may it last.
Yeah, okay. That's an interesting movement there. Right, Ethiopia, we're going to go to next. And lots of people alerted in ethnic clashes.
Yeah, so last week we actually spoke about Nigeria and we were looking at the ethnic clashes in that country, which was to do with farmers and pastoralists, disputes over land. And this is essentially the same. Now, basically it centres around two ethnic groups within Ethiopia, one called the Oromo, who are about 32% of the population of Ethiopia, and another group called the Somali. So it's on their border. So the Somalia is a province within Ethiopia, which borders Somalia and Somaliland.
Okay.
Just to make it entirely confusing for everyone.
Yeah.
But anyway, that borders this large area called Oromia, which is right in the centre of Ethiopia. And the border is about 870 miles long. And there's disputes over land along that border. And there have been for since time began, let's say. But it's coming to a head now. We reckon about 55,000 people have been displaced because of these troubles that are going on. And last week there was an attack which was, we think, launched. We know it was launched on ethnic Somalis. We think it was launched by Oromo. The Oromo government are saying that 18 people were killed. The Somali state government are saying that over 50 people were killed. And it's causing massive problems in a country that has, since the end of 2015, seen massive ethnic problems anyway. So it's not a good thing.
Yeah, and would Somalia, the country, perhaps get involved in this?
Well, that is another problem, of course. So we know that, for example, Somaliland, which is autonomous and wants to actually break away from Somalia, we know that two Oromo were killed in Somaliland. Whether this was a result of all these tensions here, we don't know for sure, but there certainly is amongst people who are analysing the area concern that it might spread further.
Yeah, of course, this goes back to just the drawing up of borders by colonial powers and the ham-fisted job they did of it.
Yeah.
Right, Sierra Leone we're going to next, and they've accepted deportees.
Yes, a very interesting one here. It's a short story, but it's a very interesting one. There was four countries who were penned in for fresh visa restrictions by the United States. So there was Cambodia, and then there was three African countries, Guinea, Eritrea and Sierra Leone. And last week, Sierra Leone said, well, look, you know, we were given this information on the 13th of September, I think. The US said that we're going to put visa restrictions, people traveling into the United States. And that included people who were working for the state, in fact. And the idea was that the US just wanted to deport 27 people or some people back from the United States.
Mm.
Most of these were criminals.
Yeah.
Sierra Leone said no initially, and now they've done a U-turn after this announcement was made on the restrictions. So they said that they will take back those 27s. Now, as this so far, there's been no word from the US as to whether that U-turn will affect change on those visa restrictions. So it'll be interesting to see. The bet would be that they will say, okay, well, we'll, you know, turn those restrictions around. And then I suppose from a US point of view, the hope would be that the other countries would then row in behind it as well.
Yeah. Those four countries have been defined as being recalcitrant nations.
Yes.
Which is an odd one.
Yeah. It's funny though, because it's one of these things, it's not getting as much press as, you know, the whole Muslim ban.
Yeah.
But it's slowly allowing the policy to creep in by the back door, and it'll be interesting to see how it develops.
And whether it becomes a growing list.
Indeed.
Yeah, indeed. Right. Indeed, Venezuela might one day appear on that list. Now, what's the rabbit plan?
Well, the rabbit plan was a plan that was put together by President Maduro. He basically said, I'll give you the quote. He wanted to give people rabbits because they breed like rabbits, and then they could be eaten.
Okay.
The problem was when they launched the pilot of this, some rabbits were given to 15 communities. And when they went back to check how they were getting on, they found that they were putting ribbons and bows on the rabbits and keeping them as pets.
Yes.
And they weren't being turned into rabbit stew, which I suppose what the original plan was. So it's not going particularly well. But I suppose it's just indicative of how sort of undignified this whole thing is now getting in Venezuela. Of course, they're towing the party line that it's all, you know, US imperialism, and they're trying to bring the country down. But of course, the opposition are saying that it's just Maduro's kind of crazy, really, and just can't run the country.
This is, I suppose, almost like these are increasingly desperate attempts to try and shore up the economy and stop people from starving.
And I mean, there is reports of child malnutrition. There was a report done where apparently the three out of four Venezuelans had lost 19 pounds in weight. Would that make sense due to the economic crisis? They can't get basic staples there. Shops and food businesses have been closing down every day for the last nearly three years at this stage. So they really are, it's desperate. The situation really is desperate.
Yeah, and even though Venezuela has oil.
Well, yeah, but that's part of the problem because there's no diversification. That's the only thing they have. I remember we did a story about 2 years ago about them not being able to get condoms because they had to import them and the price of them were so extortionate, it was unbelievably expensive that they just couldn't get them and there was no subsidy for them.
Yeah, but presumably they can't sell enough oil or they don't have enough people to sell the oil to.
I think the only thing that I know about it is that the price is just still so low. And the irony of it is that they actually import oil from the United States because the crude that they extract in Venezuela is really thick. So they actually bring oil in from the United States and they mix it to sort of thin it out and then they export it again. It's one of those,
it's not a happy time for
not
the people living in Venezuela, that's for sure. Right, the United States we're going to next, or Google, which we were just saying almost counts as a country in itself now at this stage of the game. So what's happening in Google land, Jonathan?
So in Google land, three former female employees are taking them to court. They filed on Thursday in the San Francisco Superior Court, and it's to do with pay discrimination. Basically, there was an investigation launched by the Labor Relations Court or whatever they're called in the United States, or the Labor Department, investigating this. And their initial reports say that, there's something more to be investigated here. So Google and the Labor Department are now in court and have been for the last couple of months. The Labor Department are trying to get more documents out of Google. Google are saying, no, we don't need to give you these things because it's, you know, privacy issues. And in the meantime, these three employees are taking a case against Google. to cut a long story short, and I'll give you one example, Kelly Ellis is a woman who quit Google in 2014, and she said that male engineers with similar experience were hired to higher paying job levels, and she was denied a promotion despite having similar feedback from her bosses.
Mm.
And there is rumour, and indeed that initial report was done, which suggests that, you know, the pay gaps are massive.
And is this a class action in the sense that if they win, that potentially thousands of women could benefit from this?
That's a fascinating detail of it. That hasn't been decided yet. The lawyer for these three women is seeking it to be turned into a class action. How that's done, I don't know. But ultimately, that's what they're looking for, which will mean thousands of employees and former employees probably looking for money.
Very interesting. Right, Australia we're going to next. And conservative Hindus, at least, have taken offence at an advert.
Yeah, there's about 440,000 Hindus living in Australia.
Right.
So some of them have taken offence at an advert that was launched a few weeks ago, I think, by the Meat and Livestock Australia. They're obviously some sort of association that promote that. It's a very long ad. It's over 2 minutes long, and it promotes lamb. And the way that it's done is it has various different religious figures all gathered around a table. So Jesus is there, Zeus is there, Bacchus is there.
Something to offend everyone.
Yes,
there, yeah.
Basically. And Lord Ganesha, who's of the Hindu religion.
Mm.
A toast is given at the end. Of course, it's Bacchus who suggests it. And it's basically to lamb, the meat we can all eat. But of course, Lord Ganesha is a vegetarian.
I'm sorry for laughing, but you'd really think someone should have researched that before they made that advert.
So we don't know if he's actually eating the lamb itself. Maybe he, you know, politely says, I can't eat lamb or whatever. But it was enough to offend people within Australia, amongst the Hindu community, and even the Indian government got involved.
Wow. Mm. Okay, right. Speaking of the Indian government, our next story is from India, and this is about an escaped guru.
Yes, a guru who's trying to escape. He hasn't got out yet, but he was actually being helped by four policemen. So this is Gurmeet Ram Rahim. He's 50 years old, and last month he was convicted to 20, or he was convicted of rape, and he was sentenced to 20 years in prison. So this is one of his disciples who brought this case against him. It took a very long time. The whole process started in 2002. But the four police who've been arrested were part of his... They were his bodyguards, his security detail. So they were actually given by the Indian government to him to look after him because he was under threat for other stuff that he had done about 10 years ago. But it looks like they were trying to get him out of jail, and they've been caught. And now it looks like they're going to spend some time with him,
right,
listening to more of the sermons.
Stockholm
probably.
Syndrome there. Finally, a story from Belgium, quite a grim one, about a mayor having his throat slashed.
Yes, this is Alfred Gadain. He was a 71-year-old mayor of Mouscron, which is a small village on the border near Lille in France, obviously. And on Sunday night, he was closing the gates of the cemetery when he was attacked by someone who ended up slashing his throat. Now, the person then handed himself in. He was an 18-year-old man whose father had committed suicide 3 years earlier. And this young man blamed the mayor, Alfred Gadain, for that.
Mm.
And obviously took revenge on him. Very sad story.
Very sad story.
Was a guy who actually represented this particular region in Parliament as well. So he would have been well known in Belgium.
Right. What's coming up over the next week or so, Jonathan?
There's actually a lot. On the 21st, Erdogan and Trump are going to meet on the fringes of the UN General Assembly. That will be a very interesting discussion.
Indeed, yeah.
22nd, Theresa May is going to Florence to talk about EU-UK relationships, or the lack thereof. On the 23rd, assembly elections in New Zealand. And on the 24th, the big one is the Bundestag elections, which look all but done and dusted at this stage.
Jonathan, thanks very much coming into us. Jonathan De Burka Butler there. We'll be back in a couple of minutes.
Moncrief with Gas Networks Ireland. Aren't you tired of that ugly fuel storage tank, having to order and write that big check for the delivery guy? gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.